To people talking to themselves. Our next presenter this afternoon is Kathy Riedel. Kathy joined TMCEC in December of 2008, so she's relatively new. She's the project director for the clerks program. She also serves as the presiding judge for the city of Liberty Hill. After graduating from law school, Judge Riedel worked for the Court of Criminal Appeals as a briefing attorney and a research assistant. Her legal practice is focused primarily on municipal law issues for the last 15 years. Please welcome Kathy Riedel.
Thank you, Judge. Thank you. Can you hear me okay? How's that? Oh, is this the lights? I want to get a few of my technical issues out of the way right now before they come up. Yeah, if Jameson would show me where the lights are, I'll be able to turn them on and off with my movies. Well, good afternoon. As Judge Ellsworth said, I joined TMCEC in December of this year, and I've really enjoyed working with them. I had a practice where I was working as a city attorney, and I've worked as a prosecutor. I have four children, so I have experience as a defense attorney in municipal court as well, a little more experience than I'd like. But I have enjoyed working with Ryan and the gang and traveling the state and talking about issues of why we exist and what we do best or worst and what we need to work on. Thank you. What about the lights here to get them off? Well, just when I do the movies. If you just show me which ones to turn off. Just that one? Okay. All right. This afternoon we're going to talk about fatigued and distracted drivers. So something that we deal with in our courts. It's an issue. It's an underlying issue in our courts every time we meet. And talk a little bit about why that's important to us. Judge Garcia was going to teach this class, by the way. She's sick. She denies that it's swine flu. We're checking on that. Okay, so what are we going to look to accomplish after this hour? We're going to try to consider what are the ways that fatigue and distraction make our driving unsafe. What is it that when we get our families out on the road, what are these factors that make the roadways unsafe for us? What are the different jurisdictional approaches that we can address in addressing these behaviors in our courtrooms? And how judicial awareness, just raising the issue, how that can improve public safety. I was hesitating, in addition to not having the lights or knowing how to work them, I knew I had one other task. This class is a class that is funded by TxDOT, and that helps keep us in business. We get a grant from TxDOT, and we get funds depending on how many heads we've got. So I'm going to be passing around this sign-in sheet, and we're very spread out, so if you would make sure that it gets spread and keeps passing along until I won't be able to read your name, Judge, until I get way over there. And we'll start right here with our judge from Austin. So what is a drowsy driver? We know what a drowsy driver is. Sleepy, obviously. Drowsiness increases a driver's risk of crashes and near crashes by a factor of, anybody want to take a guess? 75%? 50%? You are four times more likely to be in a crash if you are a drowsy driver than an alert driver. Crashes by drowsy drivers are unreported and unreported according to the National Traffic Safety. So what are some warning signs of drowsiness? We know sleepy is synonymous with drowsy. What are some symptoms of a drowsy driver? losing track of time. Running off the road's a good one, right? What else? Crossing the center line. Right. So these symptoms that you may or may not be aware of. Now, in West Texas, you're used to driving pretty long expanses of roadway. And who here has got a long commute to work? How far, Judge? Well, long commute anywhere. Spearman is a long way from anywhere, right? Judge, where? What? So it's important that when we leave for these long drives that we are alert and just take into consideration what are some of these factors of drowsiness. This was some test results that surprised me, that a night without sleep equals the impairment level of having a blood alcohol content of 0.10. So in other words, you go a night without sleep, you are as impaired as someone who is driving who exceeds the legal limit for alcohol in the state. 50% of all drivers who drive off the road, who have accidents, were however we are able to gather these statistics, and obviously we can't gather these statistics unless some event has happened where we are collecting them, 50% of these drivers don't know that they've fallen asleep. So what are some things we can do? And, you know, these are things that we don't find this in our statutes, but things to consider when we are sitting on the bench and discussing or evaluating certain cases. What are things that we can do to make the public more aware of public safety? So you've got a drowsy driver. What are some things that you can do to make yourself more alert? Anybody got any ideas? Okay. So, undercutting me, going quick to the chase right there. That is the only thing that will work. Things like your cup of coffee, getting caffeine loading, radio, fresh air. What about rolling the windows down? Is that going to help make you more alert? Loud noise, the radio on. Caffeinated drinks, do that. I don't know if it's psychological, but once I've had one too many, it has some effect on me, and drowsiness is not the one. Taking a brief rest, pulling off the road and taking a nap. The only thing that is going to work is pulling off the road and taking a nap. None of the above work. Only sleep is going to help you alleviate drowsiness. When you're tired, your brain is going to take mini naps. You may not even be aware of it, but your brain is going to check out on you 1, 2, 3 second intervals. You're not even going to know you've been asleep. Are y'all aware when that happens to you? I think I'm spending more and more of my time in that state. Where did that last minute go? Micro sleeps. Whether you, and this is something you're not going to have any control over. So in discussing drowsy drivers that cause 4 times as many accidents as an alert driver, how is this different than cases where we've got an alcohol-impaired driver? What are the differences here? How are we going to evaluate these differently? There's no law? Okay. All right, this judge mentions that there's no law to when you've got a drowsy driver. Exactly. Ma'am, did you? Okay. Right, and it could be anything other than alcohol. This judge mentions that it doesn't have to be alcohol that causes the impairment. That medications such as NyQuil are going to cause an impairment. But does that make that crash any less real or the injuries any less severe? It doesn't. But it's measurable, right? If you've got an alcohol impairment, that's something that we can measure. We can calculate that here is the line you cross when we're going to presume that you are impaired to the point that you can't be safely driving. As this judge pointed out, we don't have a law. So there's difficulty there in trying to regulate this. And we all know that driving when you are sleepy or not alert is not a good thing, but I think that probably everyone in this room has been in that position when you're on the road home, you're almost there. If you make it through Bertram without getting a ticket, you're home free. So how should the law treat a sleep-impaired driver? Well, good question. There you go. We've got alcohol checkpoints. We could have sleep checkpoints, too. So as we've discussed what the commonalities between sleep and alcohol or some other impairment are, you're drowsy, you're sleepy, you're not alert. Some of the factors we talked about, driving off of the road, losing track of time. To illustrate this point and the difficulty in enforcing this type of problem, which is real on our streets, we've got this vignette regarding Rusty. You knew I wasn't going to turn that off. Thanks, Jameson.
I remember the day of my crash very well. Shortly after graduation from high school, I was coming home from a girlfriend's house, a trip that I had done numerous times. I had stayed up all night the night before. Where I lived was about 30 miles away, and I thought I was fine. I was wide awake when I dropped her off at her house, and driving home, I fell asleep just a mile from home, so I figured a few more minutes, I could make it. I'm almost home, and I didn't make it. I crossed the center line, hit a driveway embankment, and flipped my car. Wasn't wearing a seatbelt and was thrown through the sunroof. I landed on the highway. In one instant, all my hopes and dreams that I spent 18 years building were gone. None of it included. I remember laying in the hospital bed in intensive care and a nurse standing over me telling me that I would never walk again. And how my life was going to be changed, and the things that I was no longer going to be able to do. I had to learn how to get dressed. I had to learn how to get in and out of my chair, how to bake, how to go shopping, how to cook. Everything that I had been doing my whole life, I had to learn all over of how to do from a wheelchair. Lots of warning signs. I remember dozing off numerous times. I remember getting to my girlfriend's house that morning and falling asleep on her couch while she was getting ready. I remember falling asleep at my grandmother's house that evening before I took her home. Because, sure, I've nodded off before, but nothing ever happened. I wasn't doing anything illegal. There's no law against drowsy driving. And it's something that I've done numerous times before, so why would this time be any different? I was just 90 seconds from home and thought I could stay awake for 90. Because of that, my life has changed forever. And now what I want to do is use my experience, use what happened to me, share my story with other people so they won't make the same mistake I did. cannot change your past, but you can change your future.
Jameson usually doesn't get more than 5 feet away from me when I do that. I have this effect on machines all the time. You slap it, is that what? Slap it? We were having trouble with that one. Here's another story puts a real face on the impact of the stuff. It froze on me, Jameson. Okay, so this one is going to... The suspense. I was telling them that you stayed put when I did this. Okay, here's another vignette illustrating the pain, the impact of driving while you're impaired, while you're drowsy or fatigued. Maggie's 20 years old. She's in college. She's heading home from work when she was killed. The driver swerved across the New Jersey State Highway, crashed head-on into Maggie. The driver had been awake for 30 hours, had trace of drugs in his system. He'd been gambling when he swerved across the road, hit Maggie head on. Here, as we mentioned before, what offense do you charge for a drowsy driver, an impaired driver? We don't have a legal, you would think any amount of crack in your blood, but I guess if you're not impaired, that's not against the law. I guess you can't... I don't know, maybe possession. But here there was no other law in effect at the time, and this driver got a $200 fine for killing Maggie. Negligent homicide? Well, manslaughter, same thing. Right. Did y'all hear the question? Wouldn't that be negligent homicide or negligent manslaughter under Texas law? I think that there's a good argument there. Of course, it's an element of proof. I know of one instance in my hometown where it was a teenage driver that crossed the center of the line. There was no alcohol involved, no obvious impairment other than being 15 and not a very good driver, and he's charged with felony manslaughter. The point illustrating here is that the law was changed, that now, and I think arguably in Texas, it would be a matter of proof, but now it is a felony to kill someone while driving drowsy. I don't know what the statute looks like, how drowsy is defined, but as a result, bad cases make bad law. We know that axiom. This is the type of law that we don't like to see because it's driven by cases like this. Here's the story of Tom and Jane and what happened to them. Oh, all right. So is it the machine or the driver that the problems? All right. Yes. I did.
The body is most susceptible to sleep at two periods, between midnight and 6 in the morning and in the middle of the afternoon. The one that's less well known is the one in the middle of the afternoon, which is the one that affected me. I got sleepy and I knew I was sleepy, but all my life I've been driving, you get sleepy, you get through it. It's that belief that you're going to get through it that kills.
According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, at least 100,000 police-reported crashes each year are the direct result of driver fatigue, resulting in an estimated 71,000 injuries and 1,500 deaths.
You think you're going to get through it this time and there's no problem. It'll pass. But there are these times when it doesn't, and the consequences can be horrific.
Tom Callagy, a college professor, knows all too well the dangers of drowsy driving. He and his wife of 33 years were driving back to their home in Pennsylvania. Tom dozed off at the wheel just for an instant and drove into the trees. His wife died in the crash.
Janie was asleep in the front seat, and I didn't want to wake her up. She was tired and happy, and we were on our way home, and I should have, but I didn't. It had been sort of gray, overcast all day, and drizzle, and the road was gray, and the water was gray, and the trees were gray because there were no leaves on them. The road was straight. There's a profile for these kind of accidents, and all of these conditions fit this type of accident, something I didn't know at the time. And there's the middle of the afternoon in terms of the body rhythm dip. I did all the normal things one does when one gets sleepy while driving. I turned on the radio, I opened the window, those kinds of things. And I was just about at the point where I realized I should stop. And I'd actually sort of started to reach over to wake her up, and it was too late.
Tom believes he fell asleep for just a few seconds, something that happens to most people.
We call those microsleeps. And that microsleep, which could be a second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, literally they're disconnected.
But if you are traveling 65 miles an hour in just 3 seconds, you've traveled the length of a football field.
I wasn't speeding, I hadn't been drinking, there was no medication, substance abuse, anything. I just fell asleep. And the car went off the road, sideswiped a bunch of trees, and then finally hit one, and she died instantly.
Crashes like Tom Callagy's can be prevented. If you're tired, don't drive. And know the signs that you might be falling asleep behind the wheel. They include difficulty focusing, burning eyes or yawning repeatedly, trouble remembering the last few miles driven, feeling restless and irritable, tailgating, missing traffic signs or exits, or hitting rumble strips.
You must absolutely act as soon as you think that you're getting sleepy. You stop, take a nap, you drink some coffee or anything else with caffeine in it. Actually, soft drinks are preferable because you have a definite amount of caffeine in them. Coffee varies enormously. Change drivers, walk around, whatever. But you must absolutely act. If I'd known then what I know now, it simply wouldn't have happened. Janie would still be here. But she's not.
Is there anyone here who knows a story where a family member or someone you know was involved in an accident where they fell asleep and there was an injury? Or do y'all know? Oh, wow. Can y'all hear her okay? She's saying her nephew was involved in it. Oh, dear. I think that it's just the tragic implications. But who of us hasn't been in that position? I like teaching these classes. There are certain classes, stress management. Like, who would put me in charge of teaching stress management? But it's good. It's reaffirming, and teaching this class, does give me pause and makes me rethink. When I'm driving home, I've got to commute from Austin to Liberty Hill, which if I'm the only car on the road, it's about 50 minutes, but it can be up to an hour and a half. And there are times I'm just at bumper-to-bumper traffic, and my head is going like that. Not a good situation. So, again, illustrating the warning signs were there. Tom just didn't take it. You know, he knew he needed to do something. He just didn't do it quickly enough. So what about shift workers? When do we encounter these drowsy drivers on the roadway? Late at night, right? Those 18-wheelers with the weaving 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, not all of us work 8 to 5. We've got our police officers doing 11 to 6 a.m., night workers, shift workers. So it's not limited to nighttime. Swing shift workers getting off 6 o'clock in the morning. Now, this, I guess it is easier to gather statistics when the accident happens at 2, 3 a.m. So we don't have statistics on shift workers or the impact of drivers' statistics leaving in the morning shifts. But it is another consideration. This just doesn't happen at 2 a.m. So we know we've seen the impact of driving while drowsy, but we don't have a law to punish drowsy drivers. Okay, y'all heard him. He said, click on the box. I really want to show you, Kevin.
Can you not find the cursor?
Well, that's right. It's there. Here we go. All right. Everybody in the room knew that but me, right? I need a flip chart and a marker. That's what I've got to do. All right, here we go. This is Kevin's dad.
She had probably had maybe 3 or 4 hours of sleep in the previous 40 hours or so. And she admitted she was very tired. She was aware that she was nodding off behind the wheel, and she thought that she could get home before she fell asleep. And the consequences were disastrous. It was the middle of the afternoon and a bright sunny day. My son Kevin was riding his bicycle. He was on the shoulder of the road coming home from having played tennis with his friends. She had been working all night and most of the previous day, and she nodded off just long enough to veer off the road. His head hit the windshield of her car, and he was thrown about 15 or 20 feet from the car into some bushes off the side of the road. When she realized that she had hit something, she stopped the car, and she thought that she had hit a mailbox or a tree, and then she sped away. And I left the house to go do some shopping and drove up on the scene of the accident. And I realized that it involved Kevin when I saw his bicycle by the side of the road. They informed us that he had suffered a very serious head injury. And on Monday, a day and a half later, we were told that he was effectively brain dead. We removed him from life support later that afternoon.
Kevin Mackey. First of all, I want to graduate from a good college and make a professional soccer player.
He was the youngest of four. He had three older sisters. They really loved him. And they doted on him. He was very bright, very precocious, just a very typical boy, and I loved him very much. The woman who was responsible for hitting him returned when she was able to admit to herself what she had done and turned herself in. There was a trial. She was charged with three misdemeanor counts because she wasn't drunk, she wasn't speeding, and by law, her negligence was not considered to be as serious as if she had been drinking. She got 6 months work release, jail time, and she was fined $1,000 or so. Her mistake was in not recognizing that she was tired and that she was impaired. Just prior to the sentencing hearing, my wife gave her a picture of Kevin as a reminder of what we had lost and what Kevin had lost. Kevin lost his life, and she was responsible for it. And she's going to have to live with that for the rest of her life.
Nothing like putting a real face, a real family in front of you to appreciate the impact. How many of you are thinking, oh, there but for the grace of God go I? That's my reaction when I see these. So how many times that you weren't alert in a certain part of town, didn't see that red light, and what could have been there that you could have hit when you ran off the road? That occurs to me, but there's also not one community out there that isn't impacted by this, by distracted, by drowsy driving. But we're going to switch gears now. I think we've beaten that point into the ground. It's not a good thing to do. Most of us do it, but we'll be more aware and not do it anymore. But let's talk about the distracted driver. Another menace on our roadways. Well, who is a distracted driver? Let's think, who we've got that's, what are some of the things that make us distracted drivers? I'm losing. Eating, right? Cell phone, okay. Ding, ding, ding. Children. Eating, cell phone, children. Picking up something from the floor of your car. Right. Reading, right? In my defense, I go on 183, and I have my little bag right here, but I have these stoplights, these mammoth, ridiculously long stoplights, and so I don't drive and put it on, but I'm making good use of time. Now, whether or not that's a good idea, I would probably, if we took a vote, it wouldn't be. Putting on makeup is another distraction. The radio. How many of you have those Bluetooth, blue something earpieces? Do any of y'all have those? You use those in the car? No? One more technologically advanced person. What about iPhones? Anybody in here have an iPhone? No iPhones? I got an iPhone last month because Ryan has an iPhone. And Ryan downloaded this app that's called Lose It. And Ryan's lost 20 pounds. So I thought, dang, I need an iPhone. So I went out and got an iPhone. And it's just an enormous pain. You can't feel any of the number pads. There's no way to operate this phone without actually looking at it. And I know there are a lot of iPhones. So I think we've hit the high points here. Sources of distraction: changing the radio, putting in a CD, dealing with a child in the back seat. I was in Austin the other day, and Austin's hilly. I was on a hill at a red light, and there was a lady in front of me, and she had one hand on the steering wheel and was back like this, whacking her kids. And I guess she had a standard vehicle, because every time she'd do this, her car would roll back 2 or 3 feet. So I'm just thinking that, you know, maybe I can make it till it switches. But she had no idea that she's rolling down the hill as she's whacking her kids. Again, 4 kids, I've been there too. Intense conversation, arguments, discussions, obviously. But the big one, well, but before we get there, categories of distraction. What do we, and Judge Lander actually put this together, and the categories that he names are visual. What are some visual distractions we might have? Rubbernecking, right. Other things on the roadway. Do any of you try to read what are those called with the lights of the messages going across? What are those signs called? Message boards, so easy enough, okay. Trying to read the last little comment on that message board before you get by. So we have visual distractions on the roadway. Signs, variety of them. What about auditory? What are some examples of auditory distractions? Sound, our radio. Who's pulled up next to a car that is vibrating and shaking and boom, boom, boom? I would find it very distracting. My son says it isn't, but I think the facts, the statistics bear it out differently. Biomechanical, but bending down, picking something up that's fallen on the floor. And cognitive. How many of you have done your long commute, you've left work, and you made it home and don't remember anything about that drive home? Man, isn't that scary? My drive being an hour, I do that way too many times. And I bring that up because it's a good reminder for me to teach this class. I'm part of the problem. But even though I'm focusing on the road, I'm alert, I will get home and not remember Cedar Park, won't remember Leander. How the heck did that happen? So we've got a lot of distractions out there. Eating in the car. Who's got a habit of eating lunch on the road? And yeah, I think that's... I have a German-made car, and Germans don't eat in the car. They don't have any big cup holders. They don't have any place to lean and put anything. So I think that Americans are... We've gotten in the habit of eating in the car. But the single most common distraction, I think we'll all vote this number one, is the cell phone. People driving on their cell phones are 4 times more likely than others to be involved in a crash. So we put them together with the drowsy drivers. It is perilous out there. Talking and listening onto the cell phone, whether you're talking or listening, the statistics are the same. Dialing the cell phone, much more dangerous. You've got to look at the keys. And I used to have a voice one, but now that I've gone high tech, I've actually got to look down and dial. Not a good idea. There are some laws. I mean, this is being recognized as a problem around the country, obviously. In Liberty Hill last month, or it's been earlier, it was late winter actually, a 17-year-old girl died on 183 while texting. She crossed the center lane of the road, and there was a head-on collision, and I guess that she was mid-text, and so they determined that's what she was doing. Yes, Judge? Oh, really? Wow. We started late. I'm talking. Thank you. Where are we? I wanted to just go over the laws. I think it was my technical difficulties.
We had a bill introduced in the legislature to ban the handheld. I know of the last three sessions. And why the hell doesn't it happen?
That's a good question. Right. Ka-ching. Well, the judge, I don't know if y'all heard in that corner, why is this legislation coming up and not getting passed? One bill did get passed, and we'll discuss that in my two remaining minutes. But these are states that have banned the use of cell phones in their entirety. And really, this carnage is starting to build up on our roadways. Localities can ban cell phone use. In Texas, we can do that. Now, okay, this seems so axiomatic that you'd think we wouldn't need a law for it. Cell phones are banned while driving a school bus in these states, Texas being one of them. Cell phone use restricted for teens, and maybe it's because teens are just part of their daily life is involved with texting, cell phone use more than the other generations. The law was in Texas that cities could pass ordinances regulating cell phone use. The bill that has passed in the legislature this year, we had the law that you couldn't drive, a school bus driver could not drive in a school zone using a cell phone. Well, now the law has been amended to include all drivers, that if you're in a school zone. So this state law is going to usurp or surpass the city's ordinances, and it's against the law to drive in a school zone using a cell phone if the city has posted a sign. The city doesn't have to pass an ordinance, but the city has to post a sign as you're entering the school zone, saying it's an offense to use your cell phone in the school zone. And so if a person is charged with using a cell phone in that limited area, it's an affirmative defense if the city does not have that sign up. So to my knowledge, that is our only... I'm long-winded today. It's technology. But that is one that you'll be hearing about in our legislative updates, but that's the gist of it. It's not just the bus drivers any longer. I'd hope to have enough time to talk about why we care about this and why we are offering this course here for you judges. Does anyone in their courts have any policies or perhaps some deferred options, any programs where you try to increase public awareness about the problem of distracted drivers or drowsy drivers in your courtrooms? Nobody implements that. Is it something that comes up in your courtrooms? Right. Which... Right, it begs the question of it's a problem, but we don't see it until it's too late. So the notion, the idea is to have it out here for your consideration and for us to be thinking on the lines of public policy. What are some things we can do in our courtrooms to raise awareness and to make folks just understand that you're just as dead if you're hit by a sleepy driver as a drunk driver? And we've got Matt out there advocating and doing a good job raising awareness of alcohol impairment. But it's food for thought. I think that I'm out of time for us to have this discussion. So I thank you for your attention, and we will take a 10-minute break.
Okay, the next session in this room will be judges in the classroom driving on the right side of the road. Across the way at Waterfront's public inspection of case files.
Thanks. Well, I didn't use the materials that Judge Garcia had prepared, and I hadn't seen them before, so I thought I'd go with Judge Lander, but I don't know. That's true. And having the videos show